Welcome back, listeners, to Sandman Stories Presents, a folklore podcast where I read you to sleep or until the next story. I'm your host, Dustin. Today we are back in the book of 44 Turkish Tales by Ignaz Kunyoz. This story is almost exactly the story of the youngest of the three from Armenia, but with a few different twists that put a Turkish flavor on it. It has Dus, which are giant magical human eaters, much like the Rakshasis of Indian folklore. Okay, let's begin. The Simpleton. At the time when Allah had many servants and mankind had much sorrow, there was a poor woman who had three sons and a daughter. The youngest son was somewhat simple and lay all day by the fireside. One day the two elder sons went into the fields to work, and before they left, they requested their mother to cook something and give it to their sister to bring to them. In the neighborhood, a Dew with three heads had erected his dwelling, and the brothers told their sister which way to take in order to avoid him. When dinner was ready, the maiden set out to take it to her brothers, but she went the wrong way and straight into the path leading to the Dew's house. She had only walked a few steps when the wife of the three-headed Dew stood before her and asked her why she had come there. She chatted with the trembling girl until she had enticed her into the house, promising to hide her from her husband. But the Dew with the three heads was there waiting for the maiden. As she entered, the woman said that she would soon have a meal ready. "I will knead the dough," she said, "but you, my daughter, must make the fire." Scarcely had the girl begun to build up the fire than the Dew ran in, opened his mouth, and swallowed her just as she was. In the meantime, the men were expecting their dinner. They waited and waited, but neither girl nor dinner were forthcoming. Evening fell, and when the two brothers, arriving home, learned that their sister had set out in the morning, they suspected what had befallen her. She must have strayed into the Dew's locality. The eldest brother, after a little reflection, resolved to go to the Dew and demand the girl. Walking along, smoking his shabuk and smelling the flowers, he came to a baking oven by the roadside. By the oven stood a gray-bearded man, who asked him where he was going. The brother told him of the misfortune which he feared had overtaken his sister, and added that he was seeking the Dew with the three heads in order to kill him.
"You cannot kill the Dew," rejoined the old man, "until you have eaten the bread baking in this oven."
The youth thought that that would be no great feat. Taking a loaf out of the oven, he bit it, then commenced to run around until he had left the man, oven, and bread far behind. Stopping to take a breath, he saw a man carrying a vessel filled with wine. To this man the brother spoke of his business with the Dew.
"You can do nothing to the Dew," said the man, "until you have drunk some of this wine."
The youth accordingly attempted to drink, but crying, "Oh, my stomach, oh, my stomach," he ran from the spot and never paused until he reached two bridges. One bridge was of wood, the other of iron. On the opposite side thereof stood two apple trees, one bearing sour, the other sweet apples. The Dew with the three faces was waiting on the road to see which bridge the youth would choose, the wooden one or the iron one, which apples he would eat, the sweet or the sour. Fearing the wooden bridge might break down, the youth crossed by the iron one. As the sour apples were not ripe, he plucked the sweet ones. The Dew had now learned enough. He sent his wife to meet the youth, and she enticed him into the house. Very shortly, he found himself in the Dew's stomach beside his sister. Now the second son set out in search of his brother and sister. He also could not eat the bread, and the wine gave him a stomach ache. He also crossed over the big iron bridge and ate the sweet apples, and arrived eventually in the Dew's stomach. We will now turn our attention to the youngest son. The mother, observing the simpleton get up from the fireside, begged him not to forsake her in her old age. The others had done so, but he at least should remain with her. But the youth would not listen. "No," said he,
Till my sister and my brothers are rescued and the Dew killed, I cannot rest." Rising from his corner, he shook off the ashes, and at that moment such a storm arose that all the farmhands ran home, leaving their plowshares in the fields. The simpleton collected all these shares together and took them to the blacksmith, requesting him to make them into a spear which, when thrown into the air, should fall on his finger without breaking. When the smith had made the spear, the youth threw it up in the air, and as it fell back down on his little finger, it broke into fragments. Again the simpleton shook the ashes from him, and another storm arose which sent all the field laborers hurrying home. Again he collected the plowshares and took them to the smith. The second spear was made, but this also was shattered at the trial. For the third time the youth raised a storm, after which he collected all the remaining plowshares and had them made into a spear. This time it did not break when it fell back onto his finger. "That will do," said the simpleton, and he went on his way. Before long he arrived at the baking oven. The baker greeted him, and learning that he was on his way to kill the Dew, informed him that he could accomplish his purpose only after eating the bread and drinking the wine out of the vessel that he would find further on. The simpleton accepted his task, ate up all the bread, drank all the wine, and as he journeyed further, he came to the wooden and iron bridges, with the apple trees beside them. The Dew was watching anxiously, and his courage sank when he saw the youth's actions. "Any child of man can go over the iron bridge," thought the simpleton to himself, and so he chose the wooden one. "There is also no art in eating sweet apples," he said, and chose those that were sour.
"With this fellow, we must deal in a different manner," called the frightened Dew to his wife. "Get ready, my spear. We must fight it out."
The simpleton had already seen the Dew far off. He walked directly up to him and greeted him civilly.
"If you had not greeted me," said the Dew, "I should have swallowed you."
"And for my part," retorted the youth, "I should have killed you with a spear thrust had you not returned my greeting."
"If you are so valiant," said the Dew with the three heads, "have at you with this spear."
The Dew, taking his spear in hand, threw it with all his might at the youth, who caught it on his little finger, where it shattered into pieces. "Now it is my turn," said the simpleton. He threw his spear with such force that as it struck the Dew, the latter's spirit departed through his nose.
"Strike once more if you are a good fellow," gasped the Dew.
But as the youth answered never, the Dew breathed his last. Now the youth sought the Dew's wife. When they opened the body of the wizard, the two brothers and their sister came out. With the simpleton, they now wended their way homeward. While in the stomach of the Dew, the brothers and sister had become very thirsty. Coming to a well, they requested their younger brother's help in procuring water to drink. All took off their girdles, fastened them together, and let the eldest down the well. He was scarcely halfway down when he began to bellow with fear.
"Oh, draw me up! I am burning!"
He was pulled up immediately, and the second brother next essayed the task. But the same thing happened with him also.
"Now it is my turn," said the simpleton.
"But mind you do not draw me up, however much I may beg you to do so." So they let him down, and though they heard his cries of fear, they took no heed, but lowered him to the bottom of the well. Here he found a room, and entering, he beheld three maidens, beautiful as the full moon. They were very much alarmed at the sight of the youth, and implored him with tears to leave the Dew's cave, but he would not listen. To be brief, he killed the Dew and delivered the three maidens, who the wizard had robbed from their father, the Sultan, 7 years before. The simpleton intended to give the two eldest in marriage to his brothers and wed the youngest himself. Having filled his jug with water, he led the maidens to where the rope still hung. The eldest was the first to be drawn up, and the eldest brother took her under his care, as his younger brother requested. Then ascended the second, who was protected by the second brother.
Lastly, the third maiden was helped up. She advised the youth to ascend first and allow her to follow him. "Your brothers will be angry that you have chosen the most beautiful maiden for yourself," she said, "and from envy they will not draw you out of the well." "Then I will find my own way out," answered the youth. Seeing that she could not persuade him, she took a box and gave it to him, saying, "When you are in danger, open this box. If you strike the flint it contains, a jinn will appear and obey all of your commands. If your brother should abandon you here in the well, go to the Dew's palace and stand by the pond there. Two sheep come daily, a black one and a white one. If you should seize the skin of the white one, you would be conveyed to the surface of the earth. But if you should seize that of the black sheep, you would go down into the underground regions." On this, she was drawn up to the top of the well. Hardly had the brothers set eyes on her than they both fell in love with her, and as she had foretold, they left the simpleton down in the well. What was he to do now? He went back to the palace, stood by the pond, and waited for the coming of the sheep. Presently, a white and a black sheep sprang in. The youth seized the black one instead of the white, and in a trice found himself in the underground country. "I will take a stroll about this territory," he thought to himself, and began to walk on. He walked day and night, up hill and down dale, till, unable to go farther, he stopped to rest by a tall tree. His eyes beheld a long snake creeping up the tree. The creature would have swallowed a nest of young birds if the youth hadn't rescued them just in time. Grasping his spear firmly in his hand, he severed the snake in two. Then he stretched himself out under the tree, where, overcome by fatigue and a great heat, he fell sound asleep. Meanwhile came the little bird's mother, who was the Emerald Anka, Queen of the Peris. Seeing the sleeping youth, she mistook him for the enemy that year by year killed her children, and would have torn him to pieces had not the little birds cried out to her to do him no harm. They told her how he had killed their enemy, the snake, and looking round, the Anka saw the severed body of the reptile. She flicked the flies from the sleeper and spread her wings to shield him from the sun, so that when he awoke, he saw the bird's wings over him like a tent. The Anka told him that she wished to reward him for his generous deed, and inquired what he would like. "Transport me to the surface of the earth," was his answer. "I will take you up," said the Emerald Bird. "If you have 40 hundredweight of mutton and 40 bottles of water, put them on my back and then get up yourself. When I say gik, feed me, and when I say gak, give me a drink." The youth thought of the box. He opened it, took out the flint, and struck it.
"What is thy command, my sultan?"
exclaimed the jinn of the lustrous lips, who instantly appeared. 40 hundredweight of mutton and 40 bottles of water." In a few minutes the meat and the water were on the bird's back. The youth also mounted, and when the Anka cried gik, he gave her meat, and when she cried gak, he gave her drink. She flew from one plane of earth to the other, and before long reached the surface, where the youth alighted. The bird promised to wait until he returned. The youth now took out the box and commanded the jinn to bring him news of the three sisters. In a short time, the jinn brought back the maidens themselves. They all mounted on the bird's back, loaded her with meat and water, and flew away to the native land of the three maidens. "Gik!" cried the Anka, and they gave her meat. "Gak!" and they gave her water. But as there were now 4 human beings to be fed also, there was not sufficient meat to last throughout the journey, and there was no more wherewith to supply the bird. When the Anka cried gik, the youth took out his sword, cut a piece from his leg, and stuck it in the bird's beak. The Anka, perceiving that it was the flesh of a mortal, ate it not, but held it fast in her beak. When they reached the land of the three sisters, she told him that it was impossible for her to go farther. His leg was so painful that the youth could not walk a step. "Go," said he to the bird, "I will rest here a little." "Oh, you foolish youth," answered the Emerald Bird, and taking the flesh from her beak, she pressed it into its place. Instantly, the leg was healed. Great was the astonishment in the town at the homecoming of the Sultan's daughters. The old Padisha could scarcely believe his eyes. He embraced and kissed them, heard their story, and gave his kingdom as well as his youngest daughter to the simpleton. The youth invited his mother and sister to the wedding, and his sister was given in marriage to the son of the vizier. The rejoicings lasted 40 days and 40 nights, but happiness until the end of their days. The end. Wow, I really like that story. I like how it was pretty much the Armenian one, but with some different twists. A three-headed Dew. And there was a bit of talk about the wizard. I think the wizard is the Dew. I'm fairly sure. And the Peri, P-E-R-I-S, that is a fairy. So it's a kind of a magical creature. And the Shibuk is a long Turkish pipe. It's a pretty cool thing. Go check it out. And with the Armenian tale, the two older brothers are killed and everything is kind of thrown around. But in this one, the two brothers just aren't talked about anymore. And then also in the Armenian one, it's wine that goes to the bird. But in this one, it's water that goes to the bird. So just interesting. And the podcast shout out is to you, Derek. And I know you can't hear it, but I spelled your name right there. D-E-R-I-K. Derek is the host of Ratchet Book Club, among many others. And I hope this is making your morning commute a little bit better. To everyone else, Derek has one of the most entertaining podcasts out there. He reads new books, old books, tearjerkers, and very, very NSFW adult books. He has a voice that pulls you in and commentary that will leave you rolling in the aisles. So go give him a listen and a rating and all that good stuff. And the listener shout-out is to Muscat, Oman. Muscat is the capital and largest city of Oman, and it was part of the name of the country until it was united under the name Oman. The port itself has fishermen graves that date back to the 6th century BCE and has been in control of indigenous peoples, the Portuguese, the Persians, and the Egyptians. The Sultan of Oman was also once in the position that ruled over Oman and Zanzibar, but that fell apart. And of course, I would love to go there someday. It looks beautiful, and I'm sure the people are very kind. So to my listener in Muscat, I say, Shukran wa tisbelakhir. Thank you, and good night.